This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
The economy seems to teeter on the edge of breakdown week to week. Fukushima rolls on. Climate scientists are pretty sure we are on our way to catastrophe. That and a whole lot more is always lurking in the back of our minds. So in the great scheme of things, what kind of doomer are you? What kind of doomer are you? Time to make a choice, my friend. What kind of doomer are you? How do you think it's going to end? Dirty and doomed. What kind of doomer are you? Time to make a choice, my friend. What kind of doomer are you? How do you think it's going to end? Albert Bates has a chart to sort out some of the leading alternative thinkers. Albert is a former lawyer, longtime resident of the farm in Tennessee, and a well-known speaker and writer about everything from alternative energy to permaculture. Mr. Bates, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. I'm glad to be back.
Well, it's hard to sort out what to do and who to listen to. You've been mixing with some counterculture greats for a long time. Why did you decide to chart out the players again?
I think that this was all started by some deep thinking by a few different players, David Holmgren in particular, Rob Hopkins, Peter Harper, who were, you know, wondering, you know, let's put this to the scientific test. How effective are we really in halting climate change and global catastrophe, whether you call it financially or from peak everything or whatever the source of it is? We seem like a very small and impotent movement overall. Why is that, and what can we do to change it? And so I started looking at all of the spectrum of strategies out there and started to put those into a mind map that might make it easier to grasp.
Did David Holmgren really explain why he made such a big change, and what did he now propose?
I don't know that it's a really big change, but he wrote an essay a few months ago called Crash on Demand. And his shift essentially was, you know, he had written earlier about the permaculture needs to test itself. It needs to ask hard questions of itself. It should be writing for peer-reviewed journals. It should be putting itself into greater scientific scrutiny. And so following along from that line of thinking, he started to ask hard questions of the strategy of earth care and people care, and are we really succeeding on a global basis? And so his Crash on Demand essay was really focused on that, and the change that he was suggesting was, if you look at his four scenarios, he had developed the idea many years ago, and it's in his book Permaculture that came out early after the 2000. And his four scenarios were that we could go in four possible directions. We could go in the direction of brown tech, which is, you know, fracking, more nuclear power, high-tech solutions, putting patches on the problems that keep coming up. We could go into green tech, which is more solar and renewables and, you know, bioregionalism, agrarianism, working at a regional level to try to implement solutions. We could go into earth stewardship, which is sort of the path of permaculture, working locally to regenerate and heal damaged systems and to help nature heal herself, and in that way to improve on the underlying support systems for all of us. And then finally, there's a lifeboat strategy, which is saying, well, we're not going to succeed here. We better just prepare whatever little cocoon we can, because what's coming is a very serious storm, and we should all be much better prepared for that. Those are his four scenarios. Well, he came to the conclusion last year that brown tech is really winning. The fracking is now spreading from North America to Europe. It's going to go into Asia. It's going to go into Australia. And as a result, and partly because of the tendency of Western civilization to see the earth as an unlimited resource and pollution as something that can be dealt with technologically, and that we have this idea that technology uber alles, it can conquer everything, that we're going to go into brown tech, and that's the worst possible outcome because it will really extend and worsen whatever it needs to come to change and heal. And it's going to make it much harder for us to heal because it's going to push the Earth into a collapse paradigm that may not be survivable, at least by the two-leggeds. And so his solution really was, let's go more into green tech, and how do we do that? Well, we're going to have to disengage from brown tech, and we should really be adamant on this. We need to ask permaculturists, we need to engage young people to just say no to brown tech and disengage from the entire global economy by going local as much as possible, growing your own food, having your own solar energy, doing whatever you need to do. And then by that simple act, if enough of us do it, we'll crash the global economy. And that's really where he started to ruffle feathers, and that's what started the whole kerfuffle that we're writing about now.
So what is a collapse, Nick?
Well, I tried to call, to categorize people into whether they believed in collapse or not, and that was fairly easy. There's a lot of people out there on different websites and writing books and in documentary films that are actually saying pretty clearly that we have too many excess claims on underlying real wealth, to put it in terms that Nicole Foss is fond of using, that we've overtapped the ability of the Earth to regenerate. And it's now in a serious decline phase, and it's going to take us all with it. And whether you initiator is finance, or whether the initiator is peak oil, or whether the initiator is climate change, we don't really know or even care that much about. We just know that it's all going to collapse. It's a house of cards, and we're in a strong wind now. It's not going to last much longer. So within that group, you've got Nicole Foss, you've got Dmitry Orlov, you've got Mike Rupert, Colin Baker, David Korowitz in Ireland, Jim Kunstler, James Howard Kunstler, John Michael Greer, and Guy McPherson, just to name a few. And I would, add a few to that, like maybe fencenicks might be a better term. People who are not really committing to collapse, there might still be a thread of hope somehow to avoid or avert collapse if we suddenly made some massive changes. And I would include in that Richard Heinberg, myself, Charlie Hall, who does the energy return on investment analysis, and a few others who are hopeful that there may actually be some time if we were to make some significant changes. But I would distinguish collapsenics from utopians. Utopians would be those who are like Amory Lovins or Ray Kurzweil, who think that technology will take a giant leap, or that we'll become so much more vastly efficient with our use of energy that we can, in fact, continue civilization as we know it for another century or more, or in the case of Kurzweil, maybe even transubstantiate into something much less dependent on the physical world, like some kind of foglets drifting off into technological cyberspace.
And we're starting to collect some scientists in the doomer corner. I won't even talk about James Hansen, but look at Tim Garrett from the University of Utah. He wrote a peer-reviewed paper showing that only an economic crash could bring the massive reduction of greenhouse gas emissions we need to prevent 4 degrees or more of warming. So it isn't just paranoia to think that civilization needs to go down, would you say?
No, I agree with that. And certainly Naomi Klein in a recent essay pointed out that same thing, that scientists are coming out and saying very clearly that we're on a path that leads to utter destruction. And the only way short of that is to essentially shift our entire economy from one of growth to one of rapid degrowth. And to do that will be displacing. It will change the way that people do business. And this is serious, worth considering, and worth thinking about very hard at the highest levels of government. And unfortunately, those scientists are voices crying in the wilderness and no one is listening to them.
And I notice another famous scientist on your chart down in the doom corner, and that's Kevin Anderson. He's the deputy director of the Tyndall Center for Climate Change Research in the UK, and Radio EcoShock broadcast his famous speech of November 6, 2012. What is Anderson saying, you think, and why is he in your corner, and is he different from James Lovelock?
Yeah, it was more prosaic and talking about that in 4 years we'll all be in Greenland or the Arctic in small bands of roving nomads, those that survive. And I don't think Anderson has said anything like that yet. But I think that he's certainly one of those who's raising a voice like Jim Hansen, calling for a mass movement of people to change the way that governments are working. You know, there are others within the system, like I would mention some of the new economists like Herman Lee and Robert Costanza, who are also working within existing paradigms to say that we could change our economic systems to systems that would be much better, and we could live much better lives. But we'd have to look at what the Earth's carrying capacity truly is, and we have to think about population. We have to think about how we extract resources and how we reuse them afterwards. All of these things can go into a system that's based on well-being for humans. It's actually the central people care pillar of permaculture. And we could do this in ways that are rigorous and are doable and they're strategic, and they can be done in a timely fashion. So I think there is this division between people who say it's going to collapse, just go ahead and step out of the way or expedite it if you can, and people who are saying, well, it doesn't have to if we suddenly were to make a huge shift.
You are listening to the Radio EcoShock Show. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Albert Bates. We're talking about the Four Corners of Doom. You mentioned a name I didn't recognize at all. Who the heck is Robert Costanza?
Robert Costanza is formerly at the University of Maryland, and now he's a visiting professor at Griffin University in Australia. I'll send you a PDF, and you can put it up on your website. How about that? It's Robert Costanza's most recent paper for Nature, in which he looks at a lot of the things like income distribution and the gross national product indicators and indexes, and how can we actually change it to a well-being index instead of a growth index, and thereby shift the entire frame. And he's putting this into terms that could be understood by the summit in Davos right now, or the people in Switzerland who are arguing that we should all have a minimum income every year, not have to be competing all the time, that sort of thing. I think that kind of new thinking in economics, Steve Keen does some of this too, talking about jubilees, talking about forgiveness of debt, talking about the idea of shifting from an economy that's based on demanding competition, demanding rapid extraction and exhaustion of the world's resources in a competitive mode, instead of that, shifting over to what do we actually need for people to be happy and to live good, healthy lives. And if you shift that frame just that little bit, you can actually develop systems that work pretty well.
And then we have people with really different views, and this is where Derek Jensen and I part ways. In Vancouver a few years ago, I recorded a speech of his. He bragged about dynamite and his AK-47 assault rifle. I think the whole system, particularly in America, is designed to overreact to any sniff of violence. It just makes things warlike and worse, in my opinion, just like after 9/11. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I have been having this argument with Derek Jensen for a number of years. And Nicole Foss put it very well to David Holmgren. She said, don't make yourself a scapegoat. Scapegoat, it's silly, because when things do come crashing down, and they're bound to, they're going to look around for people who are the cause of it. They're going to be looking after the people who are the bearers of bad news and made the predictions, and don't make yourself a scapegoat. Orloff had another idea, Dmitry Orloff. His basic thing was, check your math, okay, David Holmgren. You who say that science should lead our decisions in permaculture, check your own math. We're too few. We're only, we're not barely even 1%, never mind 10%. How is that going to change anything if we try to crash the world's systems on demand? It simply can't be done. So from that standpoint, you want to be in a way that's relatively harmless and is seen as being harmless, because you don't have a chance of going against the world's militaries. You don't have a chance of toppling anything by violence. The only way that you're going to do anything that's viral and that actually moves quickly is by coming up with a really good idea and having it spread, which gets me to something that I drum that I beat constantly, which is, if it's not fun, ain't nobody going to do it. This was my whole thing of the post-petroleum survival guide that I wrote back in 2006. You've got to make transition fun. You've got to make a change to a better future better. It has to be fun. It has to be something that people will enjoy doing. Those are the kinds of things that get viral. Those are the things that spread quickly. It was music that changed things in Africa. It was music that drove the civil rights movement, music and dance. So we need to actually have that kind of spirit to get infused into our movements, and that's how we're going to really change things.
It's funny you say that. You know, I'm just starting to work away at learning how to produce music myself, and it's dance music that I like, so maybe I'm on to some meme there. You know, another thing I wanted to talk to you about, Albert, I don't agree that humans are going to go extinct anytime soon. We're tough. We're very adaptable. We're hard to get rid of. But the idea of near-term extinction has picked up speed ever since Dr. Guy McPherson started adding up a whole bunch of those positive feedback effects. And I'm glad he did, because hardly anybody's doing that. What's your opinion on this near-term extinction?
I've had these discussions with Guy McPherson as well, and I've gone over all of his different studies, and I don't disagree. I basically see the same trends that he sees, but my distinction there is that there are gray areas, and I'll take Arctic methane as one of those gray areas. We have some near-term data that's quite alarming, but it takes a study of a decade or more to really come to conclusions whether these are short-term results or long-term results. And so I'm holding out that hopefully what we've seen in the near-term trends are not going to be extended much farther. I don't know that that's a valid hope, but I certainly have it. And so I don't really go with John McPherson yet. As long as I'm in this sinking ship and I have a can, I'm going to start bailing and keep working in that direction. And that's kind of the direction of permaculture. And I would throw in here, you know, if people don't yet know what permaculture is, it's real easy to learn. It's a design science that helps you put frameworks into things and make your life a little bit better. And so we're giving courses in permaculture. We've been doing that here in Tennessee for a number of years. I would tell people to avoid free courses because those tend to be just commercial trash and they lead you to spend money that you didn't expect to. But I think that there are lots of courses being offered in permaculture, and anybody who hasn't already taken that opportunity to learn permaculture should start doing that. And that's one thing you get out of David Holmgren.
Well, I was going to ask you about whether we could really do any better than just to head for the hills or head for the jungle. And then I remembered you are heading for the jungle with a permaculture course. Do you want to tell us about that?
I'm going down to Belize next week. I'm going to be there for the month of February, or at least the first half, where we teach an annual course in at the Maya Mountain Research Farm. And this is an opportunity for people to actually see in a working farm that's been going for 25 years how you can provide for all of your food and other needs from growing long-term perennial plants that net sequester carbon. And they're making biochar while they're cooking their meals, and they've got a complete holistic system. So it's a really good place to learn permaculture, mmrfbz.org, and I'll provide that link for your site. I'll also mention that we have an Indiegogo campaign that's active right now. I'm trying to build our eco-village training center to have an eco-hostel here at the farm. So here at the farm where we've been going for 40-some years, we actually have some very good systems already in place, and people who are in North America and want to see something that very closely relates to their environment might want to come down and stay at our eco-hostel. If you want to do that, help me build it. I'm doing apprenticeship and volunteer programs all this year, and also our Indiegogo campaign. We've got some very nice perks. You can have lifetime stays, or you can just have weekend discounts. Just come and take a look at our Indiegogo campaign for Your In at the Farm.
Well, it's been a long time dream of mine to get there, and I'm sure I will someday, and I hope to find you there. Now, meanwhile, in your blog at peaksurfer.blogspot.ca, you reproduce a super chart by Dave Pollard, and I love some of the slogans that typify each position. We have everything from preparation and community might save us to smash or undermine civilization now to diminish its damage. And Pollard divides his groups into collapsnicks and salvationists, and I have the feeling that collapsnicks get the most hits on the internet. But the idea of saving ourselves is probably more popular in the hearts of most people. What are your thoughts on that?
Dave Pollard, he was thinking hard about democracy and how is it that people can bring about change and do it in a way that improves the process so we don't go down these cul-de-sacs in future civilizations, assuming we get that far. So when Pollard was looking at Graeber's work and trying to assess it, he began to think about all these different categories of players, the transition and resilience movement, human, or involved with human consciousness, you know, globalists, people who are into the rapture, you know, the religious extremes, deniers, the people who are like the Koch brothers and are actually spending money to stop change, and then people who are on the ground, like communitarians and deep green activists and people who are neo-survivalists going out there and trying to make a new living in the countryside. So looking at all those different groups, he grouped them into collapsniks and salvationists. And he put the technophobes, the people who thought technology was going to save us, in the category of salvationists, meaning, you know, they're actually it's a religious dogma that they're adhering to, not so much reality. And actually, the deep green activists have it right. They see what's actually happening, and they may be, you can call them collapsniks, but they're actually realists.
And the other thing, I was thinking about a chart like yours, it seems like a menu of people we can tune into, almost like a radio station, but this is really serious stuff. Is there a process where each of us, our listeners and you and I, can figure out who we are in this perspective?
I haven't done that yet, but I had a couple offers. You know, commenters who are very technologically adept commented on my posts and said, you know, we could do a JavaScript system here where people could make a slider that would move around and put them in different positions, and they could see what the results might be, maybe in terms of their carbon footprint or those kinds of things, and who they keep company with based on a series of indicators. I think you can do that just on your own. And most of us are sort of undecided at this point. You kind of have to have one foot in the last century and one foot in the next one, and you don't really know where the world is headed at this moment, so you kind of try to hedge your bets and prepare as best you can. I don't know that any of us has really settled into a hard position. I did have a few here that were essayists and book writers that are in hard positions, but David Holmgren illustrates that even a fairly hard position can shift. And it puts them in a new quadrant, a new group of cohorts.
Some people, once they take a position, then they want to diss or get rid of all the other people who aren't in the same place they are. I'm not like that. I think that human beings are very different, and we need all of the different voices to be able to sort this out. I think diversity is good at this point in time.
I agree. Diversity is naturally an indicator of biological health in ecological systems. So you want more diversity, and diversity of viewpoint, I think that was one of the points that Thomas Jefferson and some of the other writers back in the 18th century wrote, was about the idea of putting together a marketplace of ideas in the commons, in the global commons, where the best ideas would actually prevail.
Albert, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about as we wrap up here?
Just that there's always been this dynamic tension in permaculture between the lovable hucksters, and I would say, you know, Bill Mollison, Manasunupu Fukuoka, Jeff Lawton, Sepp Holzer, people who are very good at what they do but tend to oversell the brand a bit by saying how wonderful it will be and how everything will grow better for you if you just use permaculture. And then you've got the people who are actual on-the-ground testers and testing the results, like Peter Harper and Rob Hopkins and David Holmgren, and they're much more scientifically oriented. I would say, you know, that some of them publish in peer review articles, peer review journals, like Howard Odom, Katie Fox, Jenny Pickerell, and Rafter Sass Ferguson. And they're critical of things that don't work. And so really, the challenge going forward is do like David Holmgren and not stick yourself in a place and just firmly plant your feet and never move, but to test your ideas. And if they're not working for you, whether as an individual or as a movement, make a change.
Check out Albert Bates for sure. He travels and he speaks. Find out when he's near you. Make the trip to hear him. It's certainly worth it. Check out Albert's blog and long list of activities from links you can find at peaksurfer.blogspot.ca or from my own show blog at ecoshock.info. From the farm in Tennessee, Albert Bates, thank you so much. It's always a treat talking with you.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.